Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Lucy centers her day around her daughter, making her breakfast, helping her dress, helping her brush her teeth, putting on her coat, strapping her into the car seatbelt, and taking her to see friends. But Lucy is very tired. She has been taking care of Michelle for over 20 years. Michelle is a disabled adult. She is still living with her parents because her community has nowhere else for her to live. From a parent's perspective, how can we better provide for disabled children's needs without foregoing our own? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today we are fortunate to have two parents with us who are raising disabled children. Mary Truland is the mother of four children, the oldest of whom, a daughter, has cerebral palsy. Mary is also director of an organization that rehabilitates horses. We're glad to have you with us, Mary.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Joyce Lippman is president of the Arc of Maryland and led a campaign which resulted in a governor's initiative providing supports and services for people with developmental disabilities and their families. She is the mother of two children, a married son with three children of his own, and Elise, a 31-year-old developmentally disabled adult. Welcome, Joyce.
Thank you.
Mary, what kinds of support do families need when they're raising a disabled child?
They really need all the support they can get. Not only do they need all of the physical support in terms of physical therapies, occupational therapies, speech therapies, they also need all of the cognitive therapies that a child may need if there has been a delay. Also, they need all the support they can get from their families so that the parents can have some respite and the other children can get some attention. And later on, they need a tremendous amount of support from the schools and the individual teachers in particular.
A lot of families can benefit from technology. There are devices that can help the child express him or herself by pushing buttons and the machines talk for them. Part of our initiative is to help young families plan for what kinds of help they need so that they can work with professionals to give that family whatever support that works for that family.
Joyce, what are the difficulties associated with raising an older child who is disabled?
Exhaustion.
Yeah.
After you've taken care of someone for 31 years, doing all the things that you mentioned about that Lucy does in that introduction, you just get to where I can't do this anymore, and you don't do it as well. And there's this guilt that goes along with it, because I can remember when my daughter was younger, I would encourage her to do all these things for herself, to dress herself, and of course everything would get backwards because of her physical disability. And we'd have a backwards day and laugh, and she'd change everything around. The older she got, the more it got to where I just did it. It was easier. I didn't have her load the dishwasher because I couldn't deal with all the water across the floor. So it's not good for the parent, and it's not good for the adult child, because that opportunity to grow is lost. And you're still, when you're a grandparent, doing carpools and all of those things that just get old and you just don't do them well anymore.
Mary, how have you handled your child's schooling?
I think I've handled it as well as I can, but I must tell you, I think I've also opted out in that fairly early on I decided that the only way Olivia would get the attention she needed was through private schools. And she has now, she's not only been in private schools at the beginning of her education, but then I homeschooled her for 2 years, and now she is back in school. And she's made a very good social adjustment, which is the biggest problem. But it's been problematic because even in private schools where you have lower numbers in the classrooms, you expect that you will also have very good teacher sensitivity, and I didn't find that.
How old is Olivia?
Olivia is now 12.
And how old was she when you decided to try homeschooling?
In the middle of the fourth grade.
Joyce, what would you like the community to know? What should those of us who are not raising disabled children be especially aware of?
That our children are just like your children. They're whole human beings that, like my daughter, love country music and playing bingo and movies and anything that any child without a disability might like. And that we would like you to accept our children as part of your neighborhood and community, that this is not somebody to be shunted away into special programs, but somebody that is just like anybody else, and to help us find ways to make our children a part of the community.
When other children stare or ask questions, how do you handle that? Or how should other parents handle that?
I guess it never bothered me that much with a child, because I felt that that was normal curiosity mm-hmm. in a child.
Which it is.
And you just need to answer it matter-of-factly. When my daughter was in body casts, I just told kids it was like a great big Band-Aid, something that they can relate to pictorially. And if you're matter-of-fact, that's just the way it is. Why does she walk funny? Oh, well, she was born that way. But isn't it wonderful now she can walk? Dr. fixed her. If you're matter of fact, then children accept that.
What about adult interactions? Are you finding that that's problematic or no?
Some adults obviously can deal with people with disabilities more than others. And in an ideal world, all would react as we would like them to. My hope is as we get young children more into the regular school system and out in the community, and children grow up with people with disabilities more naturally, that as they become adults, they will be comfortable with people with disabilities. And maybe we just have to say for some of the older folks now, well, you know, their attitudes are set.
Are there some things that parents should absolutely not say to parents of children with disabilities that are very often said?
Don't tell us how wonderful we are. I am so tired of being told how wonderful I am. I'm just a mom. This is my kid. And I do what any mom would do with her kid.
Or keep telling us how lucky our children are to have us, which is part of the same thing.
They mean well, and I usually don't say very much because I know people mean well, and I'm not going to cut them down when they mean well.
But I also think that part of this problem of how the community at large copes with a child or an adult who has a disability is that, frankly, they really don't know how. Mm-hmm. You know, that speak to you instead of to your daughter because they don't know if she can respond.
Exactly.
You know, they do that to me instead of talking to Olivia because they're assuming if there's something wrong with her physically, that's probably something wrong with her mentally. And I remember Olivia coming home to me the other day, and she was smiling. I said, "Why are you smiling?" And she said, "Because an eighth grader came up to me and said, 'How are you?'" And she said, and one of my friends turned around and said, "What are you doing? She's not retarded." And Olivia said, "Why don't you ask me first, you know, what I'm about?" And I think that if we got more education, as you said, you know, it's this education ongoing from the time children are very small.
So it's safer to just address a child as you would address any other child, a child with a disability. If that's not working, then you might try other ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. What special needs, Mary, do disabled children have?
They're all individuals. They all have different needs. And usually if a child's old enough, I mean, if a child is, I would say, 7 or above, you just ask them, you know, what do you need help with? And they'll tell you. They're quite straightforward.
How have you been able to meet the normal demands of childhood in creative ways?
I don't consider myself to be very creative. Frankly, I think it's a waiting game. For Olivia, it's been waiting until she got to an age level where her classmates were interested in sitting down and playing games rather than running around outside, because she was left if, you know, if that's what they were interested in. But if they wanted to sit down and play a game or do a project, then that was fine.
Do you want to comment, Joyce?
It's been a real concern of mine as to how to get Elise into the normal mainstream of the community, that even getting her out of special schools and into a regular school where they had volunteers working with her and how she got attached to them, that was the best thing that happened to her.
How did you accomplish that?
being at the right place at the right time, hearing speakers and hearing about a program and getting her into a pilot back when they first were putting people into regular schools. And being in the pilot, she got the best of the best. And the school actually had 10% of the student body volunteer to be volunteers working with our kids. And we even had a sister and brother. One sister was Lisa's lunchtime companion, and then the sister graduated and the brother took over, and we were invited to the house for dinner as a family. And Elise was part of the girls' basketball and volleyball teams, chasing balls for them and taking them water, and she got school letters. And those kinds of things were the best experiences that she ever had. But I have to tell you, it stopped when she graduated. And my challenge has been to figure out how to make that happen once she became an adult. And that ready supply of kids wasn't there.
What should parents of disabled children do for themselves, Joyce?
That's a double-edged question. It can mean, how can we nurture ourselves, which we have to do. We have to take advantage of any kind of respite programs that are available. My own county has some, and I'm sure across the country there are respite programs available, and parents have to inquire. They have to take a chance to get away to nurture themselves. I also believe that doing for themselves can mean, what do they do to make things happen? Just like I said, I was at the right place at the right time to get my daughter into a new kind of school program. It's a matter of trying to educate yourself and to find out what's going on so that you can find out what programs are out there. You can help join with other parents to make things happen. I talk about people power all the time and how we have to join together. We can make so much happen.
What would you advise both of you parents just starting out and seeing that there are lots of needs, but where to turn?
To look for what local agencies are available. Try to find parent support groups. That's wonderful when you can network with other parents and hear about what's out there. And it's a hard question to answer because, of course, every community has different avenues for finding out what's out there. And sometimes, unfortunately, it's, you know, being bounced around on the phone until you find the right place.
But where would you call?
For someone with mental retardation, I can speak to that you can call a local ARC, because the ARC is a national grassroots organization that was begun by families and is a partnership of families and professionals. And so local ARCs can help send you in the right direction if your child, in fact, has mental retardation.
Okay. How about the Internet?
Well, the ARC is on the Internet, and I'm sure that there are other organizations that are out there on the Internet.
So what would you do? You would plug in the issue that your child has, like cerebral palsy, and it would come up what?
You can start investigating specific problems that your child may have in terms of muscular growth, spasticity, whatever, and operations that are available out there and who's doing them. And it's pretty much on the net before it's in the literature. And word travels very fast, so that's very useful. But it does not provide you, of course, with the parent-to-parent communication that's so important.
Do libraries have booklets or things like that? Parents could go to a library and find a brochure of something in their area or a local newspaper or something like that?
I guess it depends on the community. I know our local county has a special needs library that has information, but I can't speak to other communities. I'm sure that there are resources.
As in the ARC or in Easter Seals, you know, they're national. They're a national organization, so that would be a source.
Certainly a starting place.
I'm going to ask both of you this question. As a parent of a disabled child, what has been your proudest moment? You want to start, Joyce?
That is really a hard question to answer because we have so many proud moments, you know. My daughter is my beautiful darling. I mean, I am so proud of everything she is. I can remember the first day she walked when she was 5.5 years old. She was born with none of her lower extremities, no joints moving, and she had years of therapy and surgeries and body casts and traction. And the day she walked across the room was beyond description. I remember the day that she walked across the stage at a regular high school. And I'm glad she wasn't the first one of the five people with disabilities that did so that day, because we had interspersed them alphabetically in the line that was going across the stage. And with each person that went across the stage with a disability, there was a spontaneous uproar of clapping and yelling and roaring. And if my daughter had been first and I hadn't been expecting it, they would have carried me out of there.
This was high school graduation?
This was high school. And they just cheered. And you could tell it was spontaneous.
I agree with Joyce that there are many moments like that. And they also, there are many moments that come at you out of left field where you don't expect to be overcome, you know, with emotion. But you are. And I remember the first one that I thought was so astounding was when I was sitting out in the backyard and Olivia was crawling around, and she must have been about two. And I saw her come toward me, and she was covered with mud and grass stains. And I burst into tears because she had never, ever gotten dirty, because she had been so tactily sensitive that she would not touch dirt, she would not touch gravel, she would not touch grass. And here she was totally filthy, and I was overwhelmed with delight. You know, so there are lots of moments like that that, you know, are very important.
Mary, what effects have you noticed on the whole family when one child is disabled? What are ways your other children have adapted?
I think my other children, the three boys, have adapted very well, but it has required something of a sacrifice on their parts, because they have not gotten the attention that Olivia's gotten and has needed. But they also know that she needs it. And when they were very little, they would spend a good deal of time imitating her. But then I realized that it was their way of learning what it was she was about. And I think now they're very sensitive about her. And when she's being very annoying, they are quite patient with her. So I think they've been terrific.
Have you found any adaptation that you want to tell about, Joyce?
I just remember that I only had one other child, so it was easier for me to do this, but I was my son's room mother for every year. I made sure to try to do everything to make him feel that he wasn't my other child.
What does the future look like for disabled adults, Joyce?
I hope that it's hopeful. I like to dream that people with disabilities will become more and more a part of our everyday community and not sheltered away and protected away. We have real concerns about national waiting lists for services, for all kinds of services, for young families, for job support services, for the ability to move out into people's own homes with supports. And we have this national campaign that the ARC, the ARC of the United States, has set up, with working with the local ARCs all the way across the country to try to get through initiatives within the state to get more money in the budgets to provide services and supports. We had a major initiative here in Maryland, where I live, where we have $118 million over 5 years, including some federal match monies, and that will help 6,000 families, and we're beyond excited over it. There have been initiatives in New Jersey, New York, and many other states, and states across the country are working hard on trying to organize families to put pressure on their legislators and their governors to make this change happen in their states. And as I said before, I believe in people power, because if we don't plan for our kids now, we don't want them to have sudden changes in their lives when we're gone. We want their services and supports to be in place before we're gone so that we can help with the transition. So if we all band together, then maybe we can make a difference in their lives.
Joyce, why don't you tell us a little bit about Elisa's new living situation?
Well, this is very new. This is just 3 days ago. She moved into her own home with support. She has a friend that she went to school with who also has disabilities. And she has a live-in roommate who answers the phone. This is the home of Elise, Barbara, and Carolyn. They have someone who gives Carolyn some relief on the weekends, whose job is community connector to help Elise and Barbara be part of their communities. During the day, my daughter goes to a job at one of those noisy children's places called Jeepers, where she helps clean up. And she also does volunteer work at the Humane Society, and she has an afternoon recreation program so that her days are filled up. And now she's on her own and away from Mommy, and Mommy can still be there to help her ease into this new situation.
It's so very exciting.
Yes.
We'd like to thank our guests Mary Truland and Joyce Lippman for illuminating a new world for many of us. Our gift for caller number one on our listeners' poll is a wonderful book on values, 10-Minute Life Lessons for Kids by Jamie Miller. Call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 to give us your answer to the following question. What would you like to see done for disabled children in your community?
Please call us at 1-800-791-8573. We'd like to send you 10-Minute Life Lessons for Kids. For other comments or questions, you can reach Parents Perspective through your local station or by email at parentspr@aol.com or visit our website. It's a shortcut address, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.